WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. For all the times we've talked about growth and about the various plans that have been concocted to deal with it in and around Charlotte, it turns out that the Charlotte region is the largest region in the nation that does not have a regional framework for growth. But not for long. The city of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County are among more than 100 local governments, businesses, and nonprofits participating in a three-year initiative called Connect Our Future, working to develop a plan for this 14-county, two-state region. And they want to include you in this venture. Here to talk about this and what it might mean for our future are four of the many people involved in this effort. David Howard is a Charlotte City Councilman. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Michael Johnson is Mayor Pro Tem of Statesville. Good morning.
Thank you.
Dr. Edward Lee is Mayor of York, South Carolina, and Chair of the Catawba Regional Council of Governments. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Pat Riley is COO of Allen Tate Realty in Charlotte. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
It's kind of astounding that because we've done so many programs on growth, you have no idea, particularly before the recession in this area. And we've highlighted all these plans, these 10-year plans, these 5-year plans, these 20-year plans, that when I read that there was no regional framework for growth, it honestly shocked me because we have the Metrolina Council of Governments, we have the Catawba Regional Council of Governments down in South Carolina. How can that be that we have no regional coordination at this time after all these years?
Well, I'm not sure that we don't have regional coordination. We just have a lot of plans that we're trying to, and ideas we need to pull together. I think it's pretty clear that as Charlotte grows over the next 20 or so years, and the number of people that we expect to move here to this area, and as we continue to grow and expand in geography, we need to make sure that we have some common things going as well. It's not good enough just for the Catawba body to have a plan. How does that fit with what the COG wants to do, and how does that fit with what MUMPA wants to do? I mean, there are a number of people,
Let's define these things. COG is the Council of Governments.
Council of Governments.
MUMPA
is Mecklenburg Union Planning Organization. And there's a number of people that have plans, but how do we pull them all together so there's a cohesive plan is what this is all about.
But really, all these years of plans, and no one ever got together?
Well, you know, we share the same we breathe the same air. We drink the same water. We travel on the same roads. We've got many things in common. And I think that framework that you alluded to a moment ago, Mike, I mean, I think that we have it now. And we've taken a giant step toward that in the last year or so. And the activities, the open houses that we're going to talk about this morning, you know, we're moving certainly in that direction.
Okay. Michael, this plan builds, I'm told, on the 1995 and 2008 City-States Report sponsored by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. How does it expand on it?
That's correct. The in 2008, as an expansion of that particular plan, municipalities and counties within this 14-county area came together to identify core values and issues that were unique to the region. And in that process, the plans for the regional consortium were born. It was originally called Connect. The group agreed to apply for a HUD Sustainable Communities Grant in 2010. We're close, but no prize. And fortunately, in 2011, we're successful in obtaining one of the last HUD sustainable community grants in that cycle, and one of the very few in the United States that was fully funded for $4.9 million. And so this evolution began in earnest at that point. Today, there are more than 100 member groups in the consortium, which is comprised of course, cities, municipalities, nonprofits, business leaders, and key stakeholders throughout the region. The first phase of this process that we're in right now is actually a blueprinting as-built type process in which all of the data from the associated jurisdictions is being collected and assimilated into a base map, particularly as it applies to zoning, transportation, water resource, environmental issues, things of that nature.
I want to come back to this HUD grant in a little while because it's a lot of money. It's $5 million. And why we got it and why HUD is the agency that gave it to us, because this does encompass more than housing. But I also want to talk about buy-in, because this is a regional effort. It's 14 counties. It's all these different entities coming together. Do we have 100% buy-in? Because it seems to be pretty worthless if we don't.
Well, I don't know that we have 100% buy-in, but we've got collaboration, and the state border doesn't exist, because what has happened in this initiative, Mike, is that North and South Carolina have the same challenges, the same culture, and we've tried to sort through what we share and what we need to be ready for. Growth is a big part of what we're preparing for, and I'm sure we'll talk about that this morning. Yeah. And so we're all on the same page with that.
And to be honest with you, Mike, this effort actually started probably about 5 or 6 years ago. The COG, in its wisdom, actually started pulling together elected officials in these bodies to build up to this effort so that we could have a vision, is what I think it was about before. So this is the next step in that. So they've actually laid the framework, the groundwork for this for several years.
Let me bring Pat Riley into this conversation. He's the business person at the table, and there are lots of business people involved in this effort. Why? Because this seems to be a government issue, not a business issue and not an individual issue. It's a government issue. What is business's involvement in that?
Our region, this region to the world, is a special place. The world, whether Germany, Asia, or other parts of America, look at this region, and it is somewhere that is very attractive at creating jobs and sustainability as far as economic development. Many of us came here from other parts of the country. I came from Pennsylvania. I'm here 21 years. I served on a planning commission 8, and all we spent our time was redoing things that were not done correctly and not planned correctly years ago. Business is involved, just like the public's going to be involved, in that we have to make sure that this isn't something that when it's done sits on the shelf.
Yeah.
Kumbaya for a while, but then all of a sudden, you know, it breaks down. Because 20 years from now, 25 years from now, our children, grandchildren, folks that are coming here are going to look back and say, what were these people thinking and what were they doing?
Yeah.
If we do a zoning map that doesn't match my neighbor's zoning match, if I'm taking my sewer and putting it on top of you, if we have a water basin right now, if the people come here like they're coming here and been coming here, we have 3 water basins that are not going to supply in 2050. So we have a chance to put our fingerprints on a wonderful future.
You said something interesting, that you've been on these planning boards where you spent a good deal of your time fixing things that were done wrong the first time. How do you know you're doing them right this time?
We don't, but I will tell you, we don't. But as we sit here, we have experts that their whole lives have been devoted to water, air quality, trash, transportation. We got to allow the experts to do their job. What we're here talking about is to get the elected officials, once the experts do their job, to put their political bias aside, businesses to look here and say a community is either growing or decaying,
yeah,
and the only way it's going to grow is to create jobs. So we're going to be the cover for politicians, and we're also going to be the pinch to the politicians to say, folks, we elected you. We need to implement these good strategies.
Thank you, Pat.
Go ahead.
I think you ask it a very good question, Mike, in that, yes, the answer to your question is there are some communities that haven't bought in. But here's the fundamental difference in this approach and other plans that are perhaps done more exclusively to one specific area or created in a little bit more of a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Inclusivity is very important in this process. And what COG is doing here is we're engaging the public.
Yeah.
There will be more than 100 meetings engaging the public in this 3-year process. And so the long and short of that is, if you don't represent your community, the individuality of your community, how will it be recognized and preserved in the future? because that's the interesting part about what we are. Sure, we have common problems, but we are also many, many communities of different resource and of different needs and different attributes. And that is what this plan hopefully will reflect mm-hmm. because of this community engagement.
And is that what you're talking about, Pat, when you said cover? You that's something that David Howard, just thank you for, giving cover to our politicians and prodding them at the same time. Are you talking about just businesses, or are you talking about citizens prodding and giving cover to these politicians when they go out to
the community? As you heard, we have the experts doing the field work, expertise work. Mm-hmm. We have to get the public on board to say, you know what, I adhere and agree long term that these are good principles. Then we have to get the politicians, whether it's the federal, state, or local, because some of these are going to be major projects, major, very expensive projects that one county and one city can't even begin to comprehend on their own. We're going to have to look at the federal and state help, mm-hmm. but we have to do that in concert with each other. If we're divided, we are not going to get the attention we need at the state and federal levels. So when I say cover, these are expensive. What's happening down in York County, what everything Mecklenburg does, unfortunately, is going to end up in South Carolina as it relates to air quality and water quality. So sometimes it's business is economic development, creating jobs. That's over here, and you cannot continue to create jobs and economic vitality and quality of life and cost of living if we don't stand behind our elected officials. And on sometimes when we can't stand behind them, we just have to poke them a little bit to get the job done.
David Howard.
The poking doesn't bother me, Pat. It's okay. But, you know, the reality is what my good friend from York said. You know, a lot of these problems could care less about city limits or state limits. You know, the water flows down to South Carolina. The air blows up north. I mean, you know, all of this matters for us. And from a business community standpoint, one of the things that we've heard over and over again is predictability is one of the things that they love about our region. If we have a plan, it means something. If we say that we're going to do something, they can count on it. So predictability helps business know that this is a stable community for them to build in.
So all you have to do is look at Washington and see the unpredictability of the last couple of years and what it has resulted in. And
that's
this
right.
is the other side of that. We have people from Charlotte City Council, from Statesville, from York, South Carolina at the table. That's just three. Those are just three of the areas that are represented in this, Bob. Who are some of the other entities that are part of this?
Well, we've got
process?
Lancaster, Union, Chester, and York counties, and we're going to have an open house tonight in Lancaster about mm-hmm. what we're talking about this morning. And then tomorrow we're going to have an open house in Fort Mill. And so, you know, we're bringing the whole southern part of the effort together. We're going to have nine of these open house meetings. The first one we had, which was in Rock Hill last week, we had 125 people there on an evening. And there are other things that they could have gone to, but they came to talk about the future. And that was, I think, reassuring to know that that many people wanted to come.
And when you say they, who are they? These are just citizens?
A good cross-section. It's an open house, we call it. And so it's an open house to anybody who wants to attend. And the one in Lancaster is tonight, and the one in Fort Mill is tomorrow.
There's one in Belmont tomorrow.
Right. And then Thursday, we've got one in Richburg. So we're hitting the cities, the smaller cities, the towns, the farming communities. We've got them all.
So actually, just this week, you have a meeting in Lancaster tonight. You have a meeting in Belmont at Belmont Abbey College tomorrow, also in Fort Mill tomorrow, in Charlotte on Wednesday, in Huntersville on Thursday, Richburg, South Carolina on Thursday as well. So a lot of meetings scattered around the area to talk about this. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about Connect Our Future in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFA. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Foundation for the Carolinas, inspiring the art of philanthropy. The annual meeting, March 14th, features Andrew Zolli, futurist and author of Resilience, How Things Bounce Back. Details at fftc.org. Lindy Ortega has been called Canada's answer to Dolly Parton and the love child of Johnny Cash and Nancy Sinatra. And if that has you intrigued, She will join us tomorrow at 9. She's bringing her guitar and her voice. We'll share some music with you. And then in the second half of the program, a play that turns 50 Shades of Grey, that novel that's been making its rounds, a play that turns it on its ears, maybe on its rear end. I don't know. It's called Spank, the 50 Shades parody that's being met with enthusiasm around the country. It opens here tomorrow night, and the cast joins us first tomorrow morning. Stay with us.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a 2005 law protects gun companies from liability suits, making it difficult for victims of gun violence to challenge the industry, how gun makers got special protection, and new attempts to change the federal law.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning after Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with David Howard, Charlotte City Councilman, Michael Johnson, Mayor Pro Tem of Statesville, Dr. Edward Lee, Mayor of York, South Carolina, and Chair of the Catawba Regional Council of Governments, and Pat Riley is the COO of
President and COO.
Okay. Of Allen Tate Realty. And we're all talking about Connect Our Future, which is a 14-county, two-state cooperative venture to put together the first ever regionally coordinated plan for growth and development and water quality and air quality and more, something we've never had before. And is this about preserving quality of life, or is this about remaining competitive? Because you mentioned the certainty that business wants if they want to locate in a region. They want to know that things are, they have a plan in place and they're going to follow the plan. Is it about that, or is it about quality of life?
I think it's both. I mean, people, if you think about it, when you move to an area, you want to make sure that, you know, that the company that you're going to work for is stable, and that environment around it is stable. And you also want to make sure when you go home that you can get home in a decent time. That's transportation. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure the water's clean. That's the environment. You want to make sure that your kids breathe good air. And you want to make sure the land you surround your house and your job and all that makes sense so you can get your groceries. I mean, it's both.
Charlotte is very different from Belmont. Mecklenburg County is different from Iredell County. And North Carolina is different from South Carolina. All you have to do is cross the border to find that out. How do you get all these disparate entities with all their own personal needs and values together?
Well, my friend Michael Johnson and I have talked for the last year about downtown Statesville and downtown York. And so a lot of the challenges that we face, making sure that our downtowns continue to be viable and that we have downtowns where people want to come as destinations, they want to shop in downtowns. That's an issue in Statesville. That's an issue in York. That's an issue in Clover. And you can go around those 14 counties and you'll find all those downtown areas face the same challenges.
As I understand this, you just mentioned, Michael, that we got a $4.9 million grant from HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Department in Washington, along with a $3 million set of matching grants that kicked into high gear. That's $8 million. If I did the math right, it's close to $8 million.
You're right.
Just from an ignoramus's point of view, that would be me, why do you need $8 million to study this?
Well, the actual distribution of funds is that there's a significant staff requirement to assimilate all the pieces and parts that go into a 14-county region in terms of assessment of the main determinants that the study will look at. And I think at this point there have been 32 determinants which have been defined. That will be reference points in the study. So that in of itself is an enormous amount of work. The collecting and putting together all of these regional presentations, and again, there will be four of them, is an enormous task.
That's $2 million a study.
Excuse me?
That's $2 million per region if there's four of them.
Well, that's just the public engagement part.
Okay.
And then, of course, as Pat had stated, we will be soliciting and using in-kind contribution of expertise. And, of course, then there will be paid consultants in their various and respective areas who will be involved in actually the nuts and bolts of the data collection and assimilation.
The bulk of the money is coming from HUD. Why HUD? Because this is more than housing.
Go ahead.
From an outsider, from a business leader, when you talk about funding Salt Lake City region, who went through a similar process a couple years ago, identified $4.5 million in infrastructure savings by collective planning. Kansas City region identified $2 billion in infrastructure savings. So what HUD's looking at, and I think as a citizen in this great country, for me, I'm gratified that somebody's looking big picture so that we don't take and spend all this money individually that doesn't link to each other. There can be big collective savings. So I look at the federal government. To me, I'm gratified that they're looking and saying, you know what, if you need something in this region that you folks all agree, we will have a better chance to allure those funds if we have shown that we have done the work and joined hands and done this pre-work in advance. So I say spend some money in advance for long-term savings and quality planning.
But let's remember what HUD stands for. It stands for Housing and Urban Development. One of the things that the new secretary, he's not new anymore, I guess he's been there for 4 years, Sean Donovan talked about when he first came in, was the fact that he wanted to spend a lot more time on the urban development part of what HUD is all about. And a lot of times we hear urban development and we think about just, you know, the bigger metropolitan areas. Well, in this situation, all of the areas, those 14 counties, in some way or the other, were all codependent on each other, whether it be roads, whether it be air, whether it be some of the things we've talked about. So this is more about the urban development part of what HUD is about.
Since we're the only big city or big region of its kind without one of these plans, although we're working on putting one together, in areas that have these plans and they've been in place and they've been in operation for a while, what have we witnessed? What has come out of those plans besides the savings that Pat Riley talked about?
Well, I can tell you what we're looking for.
And I want to know what's happened.
Okay.
You can tell me what you're looking for in a second. I want to know what's happened in areas that have put
Well,
these
we have a
together.
Comprehensive plan, and by state law in South Carolina, every city has to have a comprehensive plan, and we follow it. We're required to follow it. And it deals with certain elements such as housing, transportation, water, air quality. And so we implement the things in our comprehensive plans, and I think every city in South Carolina does that, and I'm sure North Carolina does.
It's not answering my question. My question was, in areas that have already had these plans in place for a while and in operation, what has been the outcome?
In Utah, I know for sure that they've had better coordination. For instance, let's use the example of just roads. There's a noticeable difference when you go down 77 and you enter into South Carolina. Of what happens on our roads.
That's right. That's because Dr. Lee has made the roads wider when you cross the border.
There are things that we can learn from each other so that we can better coordinate those dollars in the future so that when they have a project, they're talking to our people. It's just coordination. It's better
Still haven't answered my question. You don't know the answer
to the
question.
Let me take a shot at it, okay?
Michael can answer the question.
That's right.
I think it's the elimination of redundancy in a broad sense. One of the studies that Pat cited in Kansas City, I think, was the elimination of about $1.2 billion in infrastructure costs that they were able to achieve through greater efficiency and elimination of redundancy. And that's part and parcel of what this study is going to look at in terms of this community mapping issue. We'll look for those holes. We'll look for those overlaps. And try and make the interface of the service with the community far more seamless in its characteristics. But I think on to another point, if I may, about the region, and I think this is very important. When people come to this region, they look, relocating companies in particular, and I think that many of the top relocation firms would agree with this, that prospective industry looks at regions, per se. And without a regional plan, we are at a deficit in terms of being able to say, okay, this is how we're going to handle our carbon footprint. This is how we're going to handle transportation. This is what you can expect over whatever term, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. We don't have that ability. But what I can tell you for a fact is that business looks at this region in its totality. Mm-hmm. And how do I know that? Because when an economic development prospect comes to Statesville in the region, 9 times out of 10, Eddie's going to see him in York. David's going to see him in Mecklenburg. Our colleagues in Lincoln County are going to see him at their industrial park, and so on and so forth. And they pretty well run the circuit.
They're shopping around.
They're shopping around. And if they can't find a comfort level or their needs being met with workforce development or all these other entities that are going to be covered in this report, then they move on to the next case, which, you know, maybe Tennessee, maybe Georgia, maybe Florida.
So in my vain attempt to find a real answer to what the plans like these have resulted in elsewhere, David, you wanted to say what you hoped it would result in here, so I'll give you that opportunity now.
Well, what we know is that the federal government has evolved in the way that they're approaching urban areas. They like to spend their money and leverage it together. So at this part of this grant, what I believe is the Department of Transportation, Department of Education. What they're saying is that when you have a regional plan, it helps us to know that we're spending our money in a way that is going to affect the region and not just a city here and there. Mm-hmm. They don't have 14 different applications. They have one because now we're all working together. So what we know is that they're giving more credence to requests for grants and other funding to regions that have gone through this process. So what this should result in is us getting even more support from a federal level and positioning us better.
Let's talk about growth for a second. Is the aim of this to control growth or to control the impact of growth? And is there a difference? There must be a difference.
I think it's both.
I'll take a stab at that. I think it's growth is going to come. We saw through the recession the last couple years. You would think that through the last 4 years that our in-migration would have decreased, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think just in Mecklenburg County, I heard 30,000 a year for the last 3 years. Folks are coming here without jobs because they know they want to live here. There's generations, new generations now coming out of school are saying, I will take a job that I don't want because I want to live in this region. And that's invigorating. That's invigorating. So the onus is on us is workplace, workforce development, creating jobs to meet what the companies need. We're hearing about that all around us. But it's also housing hasn't been mentioned here. But one of these subgroups, and we have experts right now involved in the housing portion of it, workforce housing, a rail line that cannot go where it needs to go because one town or one city or one borough says no, is ludicrous when you talk about a master plan. I'm a federal government. I'm not going to fund a light rail line that's going to stop and not go where it needs to go. That's the part of comprehensive planning that funding has to look at and say, you aren't going to get that line unless you have a buy-in from all the communities touching it.
And I would say this about growth. Pat Riley's exactly right. In the city of York, we grew faster in the last census than any time since the 1970s. And this was a decade where we had a recession through much of it.
Like no other.
We still grew. And we're going to grow during this decade, mm-hmm. 2% a year perhaps. And all elected officials are feeling that pressure. So we've got to balance growth, which is going to happen and has happened in tough times, with what you provide your citizens.
In the really fast growth years, which we experienced prior to the recession, how did this region suffer as a result of not having a plan like this?
Well, I think it was clear. I mean, if you look at the congestion that we're dealing with, if you look at some of I'll say it this way as well, North Carolina – our South Carolina, we really, this is our first metropolitan area, if you will. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things that we're learning for the first time. And what this is allowing us to do is to look to other places that have seen this type of growth and study how they've done it and try to put a, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all, but how does Charlotte deal with this growth? I mean, you know, we have two states that, you know, have not seen a region like this, a growth like this ever. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with transportation? I mean, how do you deal with the equity formula when it comes to a region growing like this? How do you deal with it when there are two different states at the table? I mean, there are a number of questions that we never had to deal with before. So, I mean, that's what's kind of forcing us to the table now to say we got to figure this out going forward.
The nation's capital area has three states. They have the city of Washington, which is an entity unto itself, plus Maryland and Virginia.
God bless them.
And they've, and they've had a council of government since I was a child. Are we learning anything from them?
I think we're learning from everybody. You just heard Utah come up. I mean, you know, there are some things that we need to not learn that places like maybe Atlanta have done. I mean, there's some things we need to know. I mean, already with what we're doing in our transit plan, for instance, what Pat brought up, we have people coming here from Atlanta to come see our one light rail line, and they have a whole subway system.
Yeah.
And that's because we were a lot smarter at the beginning of marrying our transportation and land use needs. That's not something that they deal with, Martin. If you've been down to Atlanta, they dealt with it as a transportation project alone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that project alone is the kind of thing we're talking about. How do we learn from other regions and do it different?
So I'm sorry.
I think our counties and cities are learning next year. I think Fort Mill had the first boom, and I think Lancaster and Chester now better be watching Fort Mill very closely to say, what did they do right or what could they have done better? And Gaston better be looking south and saying, Gaston's over there. If this highway does get done, mm-hmm. if this parkway does get done, and they ratchet their schools up, look out Gaston County. You know, right now they're over there saying, when are we going to get the growth? When are we going to get the growth? I will tell you when to get the growth. Ratchet your schools up and build that bridge and look out. Katie, bar the door.
Get ready. Shape the growth, Mike. You have to shape the growth, and you've got to stay ahead of the growth. You can't just react to it. You have to stay ahead of it.
I think part and parcel of smart growth is also knowing what your limits are. And I think that this analysis will help in the current context for the region to define its limits. For example, this 14-county area currently has 2.4 million people. The demographers tell us by the year 2030 that will increase 50%. So that brings us to about 3.6 million, and mm-hmm. by 2050 we'll double. So roughly 4.8 million people. Now the question to be answered remains, can we even grow to 4.8 million people? And can we adequately sustain 4.8 million people?
When you ask the question, can we, you mean can we sustain it? Because you
Correct.
You're not going to stop it, are you?
No, there are limitations.
Mm-hmm.
My point being is that the regional growth framework that we will begin to craft, the legacy of that framework is for us as community leaders, business leaders, elected officials to be able to continue the dialogue for the next 20 or 30 years, because I will assure you this conversation at this table with 4.8 million people that will change remarkably from what it is today.
Hmm.
And so we have to continue updating that framework and working within that framework to be successful.
So you're looking at eight major issues: housing, redevelopment, workforce, education, alignment, water issues, local foods, which I think is interesting, energy efficiency, air pollution reduction, and public health disparities. So in the next 20 minutes, let's go through some of these. The need to grow the economy. We're lagging the rest of the nation in recovery and in jobs recovery as well. Will such an initiative actually help in that area? I only have 30 seconds.
I would argue so. I mean, what we want to do is make sure that the industries that want to be here, that we're actually doing what we need to do with our community colleges to provide that training. And what we'll do with this process is actually have those community colleges better coordinate, you know, what we're offering so we can be ready for it.
Okay, we have to take a break. We'll come back with more of conversation about that aspect of this plan and others as well as we're talking about Connect Our Future. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Goddard School, celebrating its 25th anniversary with a birthday party open house event at Charlotte area locations February 9th from 10 a.m. to noon. Details at goddardschool.com. A 2005 law protects gun companies from liability suits, making it difficult for victims of gun violence to challenge the industry. Diane and her guests will talk about how gun makers got special protection and new attempts to change the federal law. That's in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
David Porter of Hendrick Acura, a WFAE underwriter.
Businesses more and more have to keep engaged with your clients and figure out a way to keep them coming back. WFAE seems to have that figured out. We have seen that WFAE has almost a lifetime loyalty among the listeners. We hear that on a regular basis.
For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We have Pat Riley, the COO and president of Allen Tate Realty, in the studio with us, along with Dr. Edward Lee, mayor of York, South Carolina, and the chair of the Catawba Regional Council of Governments. Michael Johnson is mayor pro tem of Statesville, and David Howard is a city councilman in Charlotte. They're all gathered around this table because they're all part of Connect Our Future, which is an effort to come up with the very first regional plan ever for this region, and they are eliciting your help and input, et cetera, through a series of town hall meetings that have been taking place since January the 10th and which will continue for some time to come. There's one tonight in Lancaster at the Lancaster County Administration Building. There's one tomorrow at Belmont Abbey College, also in Fort Mill tomorrow, in Charlotte on Wednesday, in Huntersville on Thursday, in Richburg on Thursday, and on. And you can get information about these meetings on our website at WFAE.org. Of the top 100 metropolitan areas, our region ranks 24th in worst traffic congestion in the nation. How will such a plan alleviate that congestion or ensure that it will not get worse, particularly if we want to grow and attract more jobs and therefore more people?
Well, I think I think this is the beginning of that. I mean, what we know, for instance, is that right now, Charlotte makes up about 31% of this area, but we have actually about 50% of this area coming into Charlotte every day to work, mm-hmm. or into Mecklenburg County. I mean, what that tells us is that people understand that they're connected to something bigger and that we need to treat it that way so that shared experience, that quality of life that they experience coming in and out of, you know, their county, our county, is all the same thing. Because, I mean, I don't think they really care. They want to make sure the quality of life is the same no matter what.
And, you know, having driven up this morning from York County, mm-hmm. and, you know, I can assure you that a lot of York County folks drive to Charlotte every day, every morning, and then they return home to York County in the afternoon. And so those roads connect us, and we've got to talk about transportation. In the city of York, we just completed our bypass where there's going to be economic development. So, you know, you have a road, and then they come. And housing comes and economic opportunities come. And so all those things come into play.
Well, go ahead.
And just one thing I wanted to say earlier when Michael was talking is that there's also a need to make sure that we respect all of those different characteristics that we talked about. Communities that we've studied now, we see that the more availability of different levels of housing and different experiences that you can get close to a job magnet like Charlotte is, employment magnet, the better you are. So, I mean, if you want a more rural experience, great. If you want a more urban experience, even better. I mean, you know, what we want to do is see the value in what we all bring to the table and then sell that. I mean, you know, we don't know if – I mean, I'm sure, Pat, if somebody wants to buy in York, if they want to buy in Statesville, if they want to buy on the rail line, all the better for the whole area.
Yeah. But Dr. Lee and Michael Johnson both experienced a crucial issue in Charlotte on their way into this program this morning. Michael, you came from Statesville. You must have left at 4:30 in the morning to get here by 9 o'clock, given the traffic on 77.
10 after 6.
And the same thing is true for South. At least until you get to the border, you have nice, wide interstates, and remarkably in South Carolina, you have nice, wide roads, which you put in. Now, listen to this, folks. This is an amazing thing. The people in South Carolina put in wide roads on what used to be country roads before the development starts, so that when you have a neighborhood, they have someplace to go to get out of that neighborhood, unlike North Carolina, which leaves it a two-lane country road for decades after the fact. So that, how do you fix that through this plan?
Bonds.
Well, that's what I was alluding to earlier about North Carolina and us learning how a region like this works. I mean, we're learning. I mean, a lot of the dollars in Mecklenburg.
I knew that, and I didn't have to study it. All I had to do is drive to South Carolina once or twice.
But we have to go to Raleigh and tell them that. South Carolina has a tool called Pennies for Progress that we envy, to be honest with you.
That's the bypass that I just mentioned, John. That's how it got widened.
Yeah. And Horry County has Ride a Penny. It's just a brilliant thing. Taxpayers like to see sunsets on taxes.
Creative
like
ways to
something.
Finance these roads.
Yeah.
Creative ways. Penny sales tax is what Pennies for Progress wants.
And that's the kind of creativity that we need to get in North Carolina. But because Charlotte's not Raleigh, I mean, there's some things that we have to do to educate them about what an urban area is.
Yes,
and they're learning it, too, because Raleigh's dealing with it, too.
But York is not Columbia, which is the capital of South Carolina. So.
But they have that. They have, but because they have that one urban area of Columbia and maybe Charleston. I mean, they've provided tools for everybody.
Well, wait a minute. If you go to Raleigh, they have better roads than we do. Raleigh is a metropolitan area.
I have to not address that because we still need money out of Raleigh, so I'm gonna leave that alone. But I mean, we're trying.
We have offices in Raleigh, and I sat in traffic over there the other day, not quite as much, but I think North Carolina and South Carolina have common issues in that we have to figure out, both of us collectively, rural or city, we have to figure out a better transportation or better funding mechanism. Ride a Penny and Pennies for Progress, it works for York County, it works for South Carolina. It's something that's always been on our look-see to say, does North Carolina need to look at those type of fundings that sunset. As soon as you finish a road, guess what they do? They take the signs down. They say, hey, folks, how about widen this road? Mm-hmm. A penny again for another 2 years. Mm-hmm. The citizens say yes because they see every mile progress.
Mm-hmm. Water, as you mentioned, Pat Riley, is going to become a major issue if it hasn't already. We've already seen some squabbles over water use and distribution. We have three water basins serving this region, and it's going to get worse. As you say, by 2050, I think demand will exceed supply. That's fairly frightening because it's not too far away.
It's very scary.
What do you do about that? There's only so much water to go around.
Well, there are alternatives. Obviously, we can't make it rain more, but we can retain more. There are possibilities that would exist, I think, that could be collectively evaluated amongst counties and municipalities for different reservoirs and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And each one of those types of issues brings with it an applied economic development for an area. And I'm not advocating any specific area, and I'm not saying that this report at this point will get in those weeds, mm-hmm. per se. But I think that there are alternatives. I think that a greater limitation on water resource is coming through EPA efforts to put such strict nutrient limits on streams and rivers that compliance with wastewater, those sorts of things, will become extremely difficult and extremely expensive in the process. So we need to be better collaborators of how we will spread the cost in those particular resource areas.
And let me give you another example. It's great that we have the business community at the table because it's also water conservation.
Yeah.
If we can actually have the faucets that, you know, use less water, if we can do that as a region and we agree to it and we have the business community at the table, that goes a long way. The example we heard last week was that trash collection in North Carolina went down a certain percentage last year, and that's come because of all the education about recycle. I mean, we're actually doing a really good job at recycling right now. I think once we spread the word to the public about what we need to do with water and we do it all together, the same results could happen.
Center City Partners, along with Duke Energy, our energy channel down here. I think we have 28, 30 buildings now on energy efficient monitoring collectively with that project.
Envision
Charlotte. Mm.
You're also studying the local foods industry. What are you trying to achieve by looking at local foods?
Well, it's health. I mean, health is number one, and access to healthy food is another one. And the way that they're distributed and, you know, and the respect we have for the local economy with farms, and I mean, all that plays into our food distribution. It's just like water.
Because during the growth years, the really big, fast growth years, 80s, 90s, 2000s, up to the recession, we heard a lot about disappearing tree canopy and a lot about disappearing farmland. I've forgotten the statistics, but we lost a football field size area of land, I think, every day or twice a day or something like that.
10 years of farmland and open space from 1996 to 2006 alone exceeds the entire Mecklenburg County land area.
So I take it that's not reversible, but what do you do to change it going forward?
Proper land use. Proper land use, everything from what I dealt with up in Pennsylvania, where you have reserves and you have park open spaces, you have where are you going to put housing, where are you going to put affordable housing. You're going to have your transportation corridors, and you're going to direct growth. And that has to be done to an individual before, when he has a piece of land that's it's worth X. Don't tell him when he has economic development knocking at his door what he has to do as far as zoning to his piece of land. You do it years ahead of time. You design and have a buy-in of a community years ahead of time to say, this is going to be industrial, this is going to be manufacturing, this is going to be a high corridor, high traffic corridor. So I know as a landowner, years before it's worth anything, I know what the plan is. That's why we start with the community. Don't tell me if this has been a family farm for the last 40 years and now all of a sudden it's worth 40,000 an acre because developers are knocking my door that now I can't develop it for what it's intended. That's why we got to be years ahead. We got to be years ahead in this thing of telling folks and planning in advance.
But aren't you going to make people upset at some point on the sliding scale, whether it's you change the – in other words, you just brought up this point about if I own a farm and suddenly a developer's knocking at my door and it's taken the value of that land up exponentially, that I shouldn't sell it to that person because you want to preserve the farm. If you tell me this 50 years into the future, this is going to be a high corridor – isn't that going to upset me because I can't? If I leave this land to my children, it is not going to be worth anything.
Right now, we know what the five light rail corridors are, and we have no idea how many years it's going to be before the fifth line or fourth line or third line ever even gets built. So I can be a speculator right now and know for certain that if this is done, this may bring me home someday. Mm-hmm. I at least know now. I can make a decision if I buy or don't buy, no matter what type of land it is or building or property is. At least I know where the corridors are. We knew where 485 was going to be years before it was built. We were in developments and communities where we had to tell a buyer, this is where it's intended to be. We have no knowledge whether it's going to move another mile down the road or not, but there's an intention to be an outer beltway.
Right.
As long as people know in advance, they can plan, they can speculate, they can hold, they can fold if they have the knowledge of a master plan.
Predictability, again, is one of the most important things to business development areas.
Okay, you're also looking at public health, disparities in public health. This is a 14 county, two state area. How do you put that? How do you knit that together and make sure everybody has access to quality health care? Is this, and what happens to that? What happens to whatever you're planning here in this area once the Affordable Care Act kicks in? Does that not take care of it?
Well, you know, I think about York. We had a hospital, our own hospital, mm-hmm. and it closed in 1992, and it's been a tremendous loss for us because when the sun goes down and if we get hurt, we have to go to Rock Hill for medical care. To me, that's not what our citizens deserve, and so we need health care in York. Will that come? That will come, and we've worked on it. We've worked on it extensively. So, you know, that is very important to make sure that there is adequate health care in all areas, all 14 counties, around the clock, 24/7.
Proponents say that once the plan is designed, it will not just sit on a shelf, as some plans have been known to do. The strategies and policies that you'll be developing will be, and I quote from your material here, will be for voluntary implementation by local governments. It will recommend non-binding strategies and policies which will be voluntary. So this will not require regional I guess it does require regional buy-in, but there's nothing holding anybody's feet to the fire. So how's it going to work? If I'm a small town and I resent Charlotte, or I'm Charlotte and I'm thinking,
hey, don't do that.
I'm Charlotte and I'm saying I'm going to do what I want. I'm the big dog here. If you can't hold people's feet to the fire, what good's the plan?
This goes full circle to our opening comments to say if we have the public's buy-in in advance, And we have businesses buy in advance.
People are moving here all the time.
And you know what? People of tomorrow may change their ideas. Politicians will change and come and go, and businesses will come and go. But at least we have a structure, a ideal for people to buy into, future generations to buy into. That's much better than we have now, where every town, borough, city is doing the best they can, but maybe not in a coordinated effort.
You know, we're really good about telling people that come here from other places, hey, we already planned that. You need to do it our way. So, I mean, I think what we need to do as a region is tell people this is one of the reasons why you moved here is because of the predictability.
But political winds shift, and the politicians are the people are in charge of seeing this through, and a new regime comes in, a new philosophy takes hold.
But I came here.
It should be flexible. I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be flexible, but I mean, you know, understanding that at least today we all got together and we said this is what we should do, and you know, so that the next guys don't have to start from scratch.
26% of the North Carolina State House is represented by this area. Okay, North Carolina, Eddie, I don't know how many guys you got in South Carolina. The one thing that's lacking here is that we never, or if there is available to our representatives a comprehensive plan that addresses the issues in the context of the region, I haven't seen it per se. And I think that will be extremely important in the future.
David Howard, you wanted to go very quickly through some of the meetings.
Just real quick. I mean, we mentioned some of the other meetings, but we're also having meetings in Charlotte. You can go to connectourfuture.org to see a full list. But like on Wednesday, there'll be a meeting at Bojangles Arena. Then there'll be one on the 11th, the 12th, the 20th, and the 21st. So I'm encouraging the citizens of Charlotte to really get out and participate.
ConnectOurFuture.org. That's David Howard, City Councilman of the City of Charlotte, Michael Johnson, Mayor Pro Tem of Statesville, Dr. Edward Lee, Mayor of York, South Carolina, Chair of the Catawba Regional Council of Governments, and Pat Riley, COO and President of Allen Tate Realty. Thank you all for the hour. Appreciate it.